welcome to the Moral and Ethical Leadership Podcast hosted by the BYU Management Society Salt Lake Chapter. I'm Dave Austin.
And I'm Banner Austin.
And we are so grateful each week we get to speak with someone who is a voice of light. We know this is a difficult time in our world. And this week we have the amazing privilege to speak with Elder Craig Christensen. Elder Craig C. Christensen was sustained as a General Authority 70 of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints on October 5th, 2002. At the time of his call, he was serving as a member of the 5th Quorum of the 70 in the Utah South area. Elder Christensen was named President of the Utah area on August 1st, 2018. He previously served as a member of the Presidency of the 70 from 2012 to 2018 with supervisory responsibilities in various areas of the church. As the General Authority, Elder Christensen served as President of the Mexico South area from 2003 to 2007 while living in Mexico City. He has also served in various departments and assignments at church headquarters, including as Executive Director of the Priesthood and Family Department. Other notable callings include full-time missionary in the Chile-Santiago South Mission, President of the Mexico-Mexico City East Mission, Counselor in a Branch Presidency at the Provo Missionary Training Center, and Bishop. Elder Christensen graduated from Brigham Young University with a bachelor's degree in accounting and went on to earn a Master of Business Administration from the University of Washington. Over the years, he has been a visiting instructor of business and religion courses at several universities, including Brigham Young University. At the time of his call as a General Authority, Elder Christensen was a self-employed businessman in the retail, automotive, insurance, and real estate development industries. He previously worked as an executive of several privately owned companies and with an international accounting and consulting firm based in San Francisco, California. Craig Christensen was born in Salt Lake City, Utah on March 18, 1956. He married Debbie Jones in March 1978. They are the parents of four children. Elder Christensen, thank you so much for being with us. We sure appreciate your time.
Nice to see you, David. Thank you for this opportunity.
And Elder Christensen, I know I read a bio about you, but can you maybe tell us a little bit about yourself? Maybe what do you like to do in any free time that you have? And also, in all the years I've known you, you've always been a huge BYU fan. Talk to us about their 11-1 season and what you thought about that.
I don't like to talk about myself. I grew up in California. My interests change over time. I've got the highest level of certification as a scuba diver instructor and course director, but I haven't been diving since I was called as a general authority. I don't think there's a restriction, but I don't want to be that general authority that died underwater in some exotic place. So my current interests, I read a lot. I love to golf. We love to hike. We have a home up in Heber and love the outdoors. My son and I own a startup that makes e-bikes. And so e-bikes are in our family everywhere. So that's the personal side. We have our grandchildren who we love to be around, and it's a busy calling. I'll tell you that the church keeps us engaged 7 days a week. So my kids have learned over a long period of time how to manage family time and our calling. BYU, I was the national president of Cougar Club in my day and played football at BYU. So we've been connected with BYU. Our current support, frankly, is we support the women's golf team. We wanted to pick a sport that doesn't get all the notoriety and has a real need. And my wife loves the girls. We've traveled with them. We coach them. We run with them. They're fabulous examples at BYU. As far as the 11-1, how can you not be happy? BYU fans are fickle. I'm not a fickle fan. They lose a game and everybody thinks it's a disaster. I'm just happy that they've done so well. People critique their season. I'm happy they did so well. Frankly, it's not about winning and losing. I look at the benefits of what athletics does for students and others. Banner, your daughter is a good example of that. What athletics will do for their whole life, and it changes who they are.
That's a great answer, and I couldn't agree more as both a dad and as a fan. It's no fun if you're a fickle fan and they lose to jump off the bandwagon. Been a true blue fan my whole life, and agree completely with what you're saying about that, and appreciate that. Elder Christensen, we have some real challenges in this world. How is the church navigating through these difficult pandemic waters? And to that point, in a pandemic, how do you create meaningful connections and still stay safe?
You know, this is the first time, at least in our lifetime, where the whole world is affected by something. Usually disasters are localized or regionalized. This has been amazing because we're all connected in one way or another, whether it's in pain or suffering or whether we're figuring out how to do Zoom calls, but we all around the world learn how to do this. From my own standpoint, Utah, 25% of the active members of the church live in Utah. It's 13% of the church, but we have a large percentage of the active membership, and I'm the area president. When the first presidency says, let's suspend meetings, we had to figure out how to do that. And then when they said, let's go back, we had to figure out how to do that. So I've never worked harder in my life trying to figure out the right way to do church during a pandemic. We've realized that besides some people being isolated and lonely, that we tried to stay optimistic and see the various ways you can connect with people that we didn't do before. It's no fun not to hug or shake hands or even smile at someone. You know, to wear a mask is not the best expression of love and connections with people. But we've also seen how technology in my generation, Banner's generation has been raised with this, but in my generation, I've been really amazed. Even my mother, who has I echo drop in on her because she can't get up and answer the phone. So we just start talking, and I'm in my car and we talk for like an hour. Well, I never did that before COVID. So it's forced us to be innovative. And I love that part of it. What I worry about, frankly, all the things that we are learning, when it gets back to normal, we might set them aside. And I hope we take the good that this has developed for us and we build upon that. I'll give you a church example. We've learned a lot in missionary work. It's forced us to be creative. There are certain things I hope we never go back to. I hope we never have a ward coordination meeting in person. It's so easy to do it by Zoom and everybody can just connect. I hope we don't knock doors, frankly, in Utah ever again. I hope it's all done through technology. But teaching is still needed, is still personal. And our missionaries do better not teaching by Zoom, but teaching in person. So there's some things that we've learned that are really going to bless the church and bless all of us going forward.
I love that. So speaking of missionary work, my brother is on a mission right now in Tennessee, and he's loving it. But there's also some real struggles that they've been having, like you're saying, with technology and trying to navigate that whole situation that they've never had to do before. And so I know you were a mission president. So can you tell us what it was like being a mission president a little bit, and also how missionaries now can find not only success, but also joy in the mission?
Yeah, I have to say that I guess my favorite callings in the church, I love serving at the MTC with missionaries. We were very, really young. We were out of place. I was 37 or 36, I guess. I felt like a missionary, but the MTC is focused and concentrated. The missionaries want to do their best. They're all trying hard. It was an amazing calling. The second would be a mission president. And I love to get out and work with the missionaries. So to be in that world was amazing. And we had mostly Latin missionaries, a high percentage. And it was fun to see how well prepared they were. I think the church has really changed since my young mission. And just to be out and serve and watch people come under the gospel and gain testimonies, be baptized, it's just a fun, exhilarating time. Right now, is your brother permanently assigned to Tennessee, or is he a waiter?
Yeah, he's a waiter. He's supposed to be going to Argentina.
Which is where I went too.
Yeah.
So imagine this. We brought every missionary home to their home country, and Utah had 9,800 missionaries come back to Utah from outside the country. And then we just said, okay, You can put it off for a year or you can go right back. You choose. And a high percentage, over 85%, chose to go right back out again, which tells you something about the desire of young missionaries. They want to be out there serving. And even though it's going to be tough, even though they knew they'd be locked down again and not be able to do what they normally do, they wanted to be there. It's discouraging. It's gone on for so long to have a companionship in some places around the world are still working from their apartment. They can't get out. Can you imagine spending with a companion 8 or 9 months locked in? It's just hard, but they're resilient and they love the work. So the spirit is strong. You know, God knows all things. He blesses them for what they're doing. And they're learning a lot of things that I think will bless the church forever. We talk about the great missionaries, the Restoration. We talk about Dan Jones and Wilford Woodruff. And, you know, I think the great missionaries of this Restoration are going to be the ones that are out right now learning and changing what we're doing. And in 20 years, when someone asks them, well, did you serve a mission? And they'll say, yeah, I was a COVID missionary, and we changed the world because we learned some things we didn't know before. So my hope is that, although tough, and you learn a lot during trials, you learn a lot during difficult times, you are forced to be creative. And I think this generation of missionaries are going to be amazingly blessed and bless the church forever.
Well, and I think to that point, you know, he is in one of those situations where, you know, you're in the apartment most of the time with multiple missionaries. But what they've learned is, like you said, teaching through social media. Their area hasn't had a baptism for over a year. He's been out for a few months, and they have already had, they just had three more last week. They had two weeks before that. It's gotten to the point that the ward is saying, hey, we can't handle, you know, all of the new baptisms that we're having right now because of how often they're coming. And so, you know, their mission president said, we're never going to go back to the way it was before. So
some missions, you know, areas of the country are opening up again, but not in full force. We can only get 20 missionaries a week into Mexico, for instance, and there's so many waiting, but it's starting to open up. The church wants to be safe. We want to keep our missionaries safe. So we're not the first ones to put them out at risk. You know, we're waiting till it's proven and it's safe, but we'll get back to kind of this worldwide presence eventually.
Yeah. Brother Christensen, the name of our podcast is obviously the BYU Management Society Moral and Ethical Leadership Podcast. Just wanted to ask you, how can we be moral and ethical leaders when dishonesty and lies are promoted so much in the world today?
Wow. That's an easy question, and I'll do it with a couple of examples. Everyone knows what truth is and what honesty is. And we also know what deceit and lies and lack of ethics do. And you're right, it's becoming more prevalent that people, for selfish reasons, I think, or for competitive reasons, maybe cut corners or do things that are not appropriate. But in my own life and experience, even in my business career, I learned that most everyone resonates with pure honesty, just pure integrity. And even though it's against the grain, I believe you get a much farther ahead in life, in business, in success by doing the right things for the right reasons, even if people don't see it, because you're known for that. And you too, you know, you could identify, if I ask you the question, who's the most honest person you know, you could rattle them off because you've already identified someone that you really trust and you really appreciate. When I was teaching in the business school at BYU, I taught an entrepreneurial class, and I'm in the car business, retail car business. And I did a class every semester on buying and selling a car from the buyer standpoint and the seller standpoint. And I explained it this way. You've got a profession where nobody trusts the salesman, but you ought to hear the salesman talk about the buyers. Mm-hmm. All buyers are liars is what they would say. In that they'll say they'll come back and they never do, or they try and lead you astray. So you've got two professions or two people that don't trust each other, and they're trying to consummate a transaction in a spirit of no trust. And everybody knows what that feels like. And so because we were in Utah County in the automobile business, we tried to say, you can be completely honest with people. In fact, not disclaiming or disclosing something is dishonest. So you overstate what the facts are, and then you'll become the trusted person in their lives. And it was amazing to watch in our own little cosmic world, trying to change a profession. I bought a store in St. George Ford, and there's a philosophy in the car business. When you trade in your car and you have a loan on it, they estimate what the payoff is, but they always overestimate it because they don't want to come back and ask for more money. So they always get more money than they're supposed to. And they never, car dealers typically don't give that money back to the customers. So I bought the store and we had a lot of money sitting on the books that was owed to someone. And I said, just cut the checks. And my controller said, but some of the checks are for less than the stamp it costs to send the money out. And I said, yeah, but listen to the message. If you send a 13-cent check, whoever gets it's going to say, wow, they didn't have to do this, but they did it because they're honest. And to me, that's really the reputation people want to get. What do you do if you're dealing with someone who's dishonest? In the car business, I knew I was dealing with people that have what I would call situational ethics. I don't want to call them dishonest, but their ethics vary depending on the circumstance. And you have to learn how to read that, but you fight at becoming cynical. You want to look at the best in people, but realize you got to keep your guard up because they're not treating you dishonestly. And I learned that if you know someone's a crook and you know that, you know how to deal with them. It's the ones that you think are honest that are taking advantage. So I think, one, we have to be examples of integrity. Two, we have to be careful and realize that the world is changed and it's different. But I still believe that if I keep trying to do the right things for the right reasons, people resonate with it. They are honored by it. And even if you had to be so candid and say, look, I know that you're in a situation where you're not being straight with me, you have to realize that I'll always be straight with you. I will always tell you what I feel, and I'll always be honest. And I think you just have to be that direct.
So going back to the challenges of this last year, I feel like we've associated like the last year with heartache and hardship and, like I said, challenges. I'm wondering if you can tell us any miracles or tender mercies that you've seen in the last year that you remember and want to tell us about, that have given you hope or built your testimony.
Yeah, in a time of tragedy. So I've walked through the end of life with several people. You know, it's quite stark to have someone who's got COVID in the hospital on a ventilator and say to you, my lungs used to feel like a sponge with water in them, and now they've dried out and they're not going to come back and I'm going to die. And I'm all by myself. What do I do? And you can't go in and help them. And it's a difficult time, but your perspective has to be beyond this life. You have to have a perspective that's beyond this life, and realizing that there's more to life than a pandemic. I think some of the tender mercies that I've seen, what would be an example of one. People don't know much about this. When we were burning police cars in Salt Lake and putting red paint all over buildings and riots going up and down the town, I've never seen that in Salt Lake City. West Valley City did a virtual parade where they honored the policemen. People came out and were clapping for them. So it's a little bit of going against the grain. When people start protesting and destroying capitals, and you know, it's time for us to stand up and be the opposite, be something that stands for more than that. And so I think the mercies are when you see a miracle of a blessing of someone being saved that shouldn't have been saved, or you see a missionary who has really done tough things, and all of a sudden, you know, a baptism does come, and he can say, God does recognize that I'm really trying hard, and he still loves me. So they're kind of, you know, all miracles are only seen by those that have eyes to see and are in the moment, but they're all around us. And so I would just have everyone be hopeful and optimistic, joyful. President Nelson, as you know, this is an amazing thing. His first of all, the worldwide fast, two of them, we got flooded with letters from people not of our faith, thanking us for fasting with them. I mean, we think we initiated it. They think they initiated it. But for the first time in my life, the whole world was fasting. How about that for Heavenly Father to see? Everyone kneeling down and praying to him, and all around the world in whatever faith group you belong to. That is an amazing thought. But his video on gratitude, we got a note from a congregation in the Philippines, not of our faith. I won't identify which congregation. And in their Sunday service, they played President Nelson's video on gratitude. So the prophet of the world is speaking from pulpits other than ours. Because the message is a worldwide message. Those are just amazing experiences. Thanks, Banner, for the question.
That's a great question. Great answer. Brother Christensen, I wanted to ask you, from a church perspective, what counsel would you have for those questioning church doctrine and maybe those struggling with their testimony during this point in time? Any thoughts around what to do in that kind of a situation for those that may be struggling in that way, or just struggling in general with their testimony?
Dave, what a great question that is. Part of social media has this, the perception that we're in a crisis mode, an epidemic mode of people that are questioning their faith. Quite frankly, it hasn't changed much since the 1830s. It's just a little more visible, and therefore the solutions can be more visible. The more we can be more open and honest with each other. And I think the best way to help someone who's questioning is to let them question and try and help without lecturing or without giving the pulpit answer to a question. Realize that their questions are sincere and honest, and you want to help them. Because I have the responsibilities in Utah, I've interviewed many, many individuals and couples that have concerns about their faith. And what I try and do is take them back to the beginning. I was interviewing a couple, the young man, the man had been a bishop, but he served as a young missionary in Brazil. And I tried to take him back to his mission and when he was teaching someone else about the gospel and where they started. And quite frankly, our questions, because we have more understanding, are quite profound. But the truths that we gain testimony of are quite simple. And I said, would you go into a new investigator and describe how Joseph Smith translated the Book of Mormon? What instruments he used, what the Urim and Thummim did, what the hat? Do you try and do that? Or do you just try and say, will you pray to see if the Book of Mormon's true? And that's where the Spirit can speak really clearly to us when we get down to the basic simple truths. So what I suggest is that all of us have questions. Frankly, the more understanding we have, the more profound our questions. I always ask, what are President Nelson's questions compared to mine? But you need to focus on what you know to be true and what the simple truths are. And if you feel like you're in a crisis mode, I would treat yourself as an investigator and go back to the beginning and say, you know, is Joseph a prophet? Is the Book of Mormon true? Is this the kingdom of God, or is there other kingdoms? You know, does the Savior love me, and did he atone for my sins? Am I on the right path? Those kind of questions invite a divine answer, which God is anxious to do. So I'm patient, Dave, I guess is what I'm telling you, with people that are struggling, because we're all going to struggle at some point in time with some issue. And we've got to learn how to be flexible and let people ask questions and struggle and then help them try and focus on what's important.
That's a great answer. I think
Banner, Banner, because she's of an age group. Do you want to add anything to that question, Banner?
I was just, the only thing I would add is, yeah, what advice do you have for the youth what advice do you have for us to keep the hope during these hard times?
Yeah, there's a philosophy in social media right now that our youth are brainwashed. They're raised this way, and somehow we have a programmatic way of making them believe. And maybe that's, you know, maybe because of family dynamics, that might be somewhat true in the beginning. But there's always a moment, hopefully earlier than later in your teens, where you have to say, do I really believe this stuff? And I would just promote everyone to go personal and say, you've got to have your personal witness. You can't live on borrowed light. You can't live on someone else's knowledge. There's a point in time where you have to learn for yourself. And if it's a struggle, go to the right sources. You can look everywhere. You know, you ought to get educated and understand what you're looking for, but go to the source of light. Go where the answers, if they are divinely driven, which they are, go where the divinity can play a part in your life and just gain your testimony.
Well, and that's what I was going to say too, Elder Christensen, is you know, there's a couple of conference talks that I remember specifically, and Elder Anderson talking about choosing to believe, and Elder President Uchtdorf saying, doubt your doubts before you doubt your faith. We have a limited, amount of knowledge, earthly knowledge, and it's hard to equate that with what is heavenly knowledge, and so it's easy to choose to doubt your doubts. But I love that as well. In addition to what you've shared. And so, Elder Christensen, we sure appreciate your time. Thank you so much for being with us today, for imparting your knowledge and wisdom. Do you have any last words of advice for our listeners before we, I know that we've taken you all the way up to the edge of your time here.
Well, I would just say, being a true blue cougar, the effect that BYU has on the world, you know, we enter to serve, go forth to serve around the world. I would just suggest that each one of us has a heritage at BYU, and we can make an impact wherever you find yourself in whatever circumstances. And I think BYU's mission and vision is important. It's a reflection of the church. The church is eternal and God's plan, and we are his representatives. And being a whether you're a member of the church or not, but you're a BYU alum and you're somewhere doing good things, it reflects positively on BYU. And I think that's a positive influence on the world. So I thank you for what you're doing and your desires to do good things. Banner, as you start BYU next year, welcome to the club, and you'll be great.
Thank you.
Thank you for the time. It's been wonderful to be with you.
Thank you so much, Elder Christensen. Thank you to all of our listeners. We'll be back again next week with another episode of Voices of Light. Have a great week.